This evening's reading is taken from 1 Corinthians chapter 7, which can be found on page 1149 of the Church Bibles. It's 1 Corinthians chapter 7, beginning at verse 25. Now about virgins, I have no command from the Lord, but I give a judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. Because of the present crisis, I think that it is good for you to remain as you are. Are you married? Do not seek a divorce. Are you unmarried? Do not look for a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. But those who marry will face many troubles in this life, and I want to spare you this. What I mean, brothers, is that the time is short. From now on, those who have wives should live as if they had none, those who mourn as if they did not, those who are happy as if they were not, those who buy something as if it were not theirs to keep, those who use the things of the world as if not engrossed in them. For this world in its present form is passing away. I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs, how he can please the Lord. But a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, how he can please his wife, and his interests are divided. An unmarried woman or virgin is concerned about the Lord's affairs. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. I am saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way, in undivided devotion to the Lord. If anyone thinks he is acting improperly towards the virgin he is engaged to, and if she is getting on in years, and he feels he ought to marry, he should do as he wants. He is not sinning. They should get married. But the man who has settled the matter in his own mind, who is under no compulsion, but has control over his own will, and who has made up his mind not to marry the virgin, this man also does the right thing. So then, he who marries the virgin does right, but he who does not marry her does even better. A woman is bound to her husband as long as he lives, but if her husband dies, she is free to marry anyone she wishes, but he must belong to the Lord. In my judgment, she is happier if she stays as she is, and I think that I too have the Spirit of God.
Pippa, thank you very much indeed. Well now, this evening we turn to the unmarried. Throughout the bulk of the chapter we've just been reading and studying over the last three weeks, Paul has addressed a whole range of different groups of men and women, with different gifts or in different life situations, if you like. He's spoken to the married. He's spoken to the widows and the widowers. He's spoken to the unhappily married, to those who have become Christians and whose husbands have not. He's spoken to slaves. He's spoken to circumcised and uncircumcised people. And now he turns to address the unmarried members of the Corinthian congregation. And immediately we face big problems. Big problems because of the history of the way in which these verses have been interpreted over the years. And I want to outline basically two main positions. It's important that we spend a bit of time covering this ground just to clear the decks before we get on to the verses themselves. Now, some have taken chapter 7, verses 7 to 9, where Paul says, I wish that all men were as I am, but each man has his own gift or his own life situation from God. One has this gift, another has that. Now to the unmarried or widowers and the widows, I say it is good for them to stay unmarried as I am, but if they can't control themselves, then they should marry. He's taken those verses, combined them with verse 27, the second half of it. Some people take those verses, they combine them with the second half of verse 27. Are you unmarried? Do not look for a wife. And then they take verse 32, I would like you to be free from concern and married people are full of concern and thoroughly divided, and they have basically taught that it is keener for a Christian, a sort of keener spiritual option for people to stay single. Or at least, if you can't make it through the whole of life as a single person, then you should stay single for as long as possible for the sake of the gospel. Now, before you dismiss that view and fall around on the floor laughing, let me tell you that there is a great deal in the passage that could lead us down that road. You can see from the reasoning in verse 26, where Paul says, because of this present crisis, and verse 29, the time is short, and verse 31, this present world in its present form is passing away, you can see that if you combine those three ideas and add to that kind of mixture the ideas expressed in verses 32 to 35, that married men are divided and single men and women are unable to live in undivided devotion to the Lord, if you take that sort of kind of potpourri together, you've got a very strong case for staying single and not marrying. Given that Jesus is going to return, given that married people are divided in their interests, given that we want to maximize our opportunities in service of Jesus Christ, then surely it is keener to stay single for gospel work. Certainly as a student or as a young city worker, many of our friends are single. If we were to get married, we'd have less time for service, and so less opportunities to talk to these single friends about Jesus, less time to be engaged in God's work. Maybe you don't have the gift of singleness that Paul seems to be talking about in verse 7, but hang on in there for as long as you possibly can. And really, if you're married before you're 30, well, you've sold out and taken the second best option. Now, that's a slightly crude way of putting the argument. Forgive me for putting it slightly crudely. But that is certainly the vibes that have come from that line. I remember coming to St. Helens in 1985, sitting right there, just in front of Leonie there, and listening to a sermon on marriage, and the guy speaking was teaching quite rightly that marriage is God's invention, it is good, it is normal for the majority of people to be married, and he appeared to be encouraging people at St. Helens to get married. And I remember going away thinking to myself, yes, but. I remember going away and definitely thinking that St. Helens was teaching a kind of second best option. Spiritually, well, not quite red hot. Funny how when I met Janet, my wife, 2 years later, my theology of marriage was turned on its head in about 30 seconds. No, I did actually think it through before. careful study of 1 Corinthians 7 and so on. That is one way that the passage has been taught. And given, but I want to just show you why there are very real difficulties with that position. Given that the problem that Paul is tackling in Corinth is a kind of super spiritual cult of celibacy that itself says it's keener to stay single, it seems somewhat unlikely that Paul would be underlining the spiritual superiority of the single person. Look at verse 32. It's highly likely that what he actually means there is, I want you to be free from anxiety about whether to marry or whether to stay single. Now have a look at verse 35. I am saying all of this for your own good, not to restrict you. The word there used there is of a noose that you put round an animal's neck. So I'm saying all of this not to noose you, but that you may live in a right way, in an orderly way, in undistracted devotion to the Lord, or undisturbed devotion to the Lord. It's not the same word as married men being divided, which is highly misleading. But there we are. Now, one of the quickest ways of causing anxiety or of putting a noose around a whole bunch of people's necks and of distracting a whole congregation is to start teaching that one way of life is spiritually preferable to another. Especially when Paul appears to have argued strongly in favor of marriage in verses 1 to 5. Especially when he tells the Corinthians that to marry is not a sin, and therefore can't be spiritual second best. And remember, too, he also quotes regularly from Genesis 2 and plainly agrees that marriage is God's invention and is good. So that kind of super spiritual line appears to be a bit of a dead end. Now let me give you the other side of the coin. Here is the alternative. Have a look at verse 26 again. Because of this present crisis. Some people have argued that the present crisis refers to immediate persecution in the Corinthian congregation and in other churches. It's not so much to do with the return of Jesus as to do with the immediate local situation in the first century. Now that position is strengthened by the suggestion that in the first century society, where there are very few singles and loads of arranged marriages, Paul is addressing just a tiny section of the Corinthian congregation. So, as such, this passage does not have a great deal to say to us in England today. We close the Bible and head off home. We'll look somewhere else for advice on sex and singleness in a passing age. It may well have been relevant for Soviet Russia or communist China or fundamentalist Afghanistan. But as Genesis 2 says, marriage is good. Marriage is the norm. We Christians in 20th century Britain should all be looking to get married. Certainly if you're finding the problems of singleness tough, get out there. Get on with it. Stop sitting around. But again, the passage I want to suggest throws up for you all charge off. Spring, early March, before we all head off and start picking one another out. The passage, I think, throws up real problems for that position. I don't think this present crisis in verse 26 can be limited to Corinth in the first century. For a start, the word Paul uses for crisis or necessity is a word that he uses in many of his letters to refer to general suffering that Christians generally are going through and he is going through generally as an apostle. And if you think it was just limited to Corinth, this whole issue of suffering, this whole issue of the coming age, what are you going to do with verses 29 to 31? Where he seems clearly to be suggesting that he has the return of Christ in mind. The time is short. This age is passing. So to say that it's just Corinth, and it's just the first century, when in 29 to 31 he appears to argue generally that the time is short, the return of Christ is here, you face some real problems. What is more, Corinth, it seems, as far as I can gather, was one of the few cities where Paul did not face a great deal of persecution. Christians from other places in the ancient world fled to Corinth for safety rather than vice versa. And from the reading of the letters, it appears that in Corinth people were fairly secure and happy and generally stable. And we certainly can't argue that there were very, very few singles in Corinth, because it appears to me that there was a vast army of widows. And Paul gives the same advice to the widows throughout as he does to the single people. Now, I hope you're still with us. What I want to do now is to suggest a vital third ingredient that will help our study this evening. Paul, I want to suggest, is not talking about a scale of keener or less keen Christian options. His main aim in this passage is summarized in verses 32 and 35. I want you to be free from anxiety. And 35, I'm saying this for your own good, not to noose you with this whole business of whether it's keener to be single or to be married. I don't want you to be noosed, but I want you to live in an orderly way, in undistracted devotion. That is, his aim in this passage is that we should not be obsessed either with marriage or with singleness. He wants us to be liberated, freed to live in undisturbed devotion to God, whatever condition we find ourselves in. Married, verses 1 to 7. Widow or widower, verses 8 to 9. Unhappily married, verses 10 to 12. Married to an unbelieving partner, verses 13 to 16. circumcised or uncircumcised, verses 17 to 19. Slave or free, 20 to 24, single, verse 25. He doesn't want us to be obsessed about which way is keener. The majority may well be married, but for pastoral and practical reasons, he, Paul, appears to prefer singleness for the already single for the reasons that he's going to outline. But let's be absolutely clear, his reasons are pastoral and practical, not because there's some kind of gradation of spiritual and super-spiritual beings. And he openly recognizes that marriage is a fine way of living in God's world. Now, before we go any further, I want us to be clear that Paul is not denying the really tough difficulties of singleness in today's world. Just as he's not denying the difficulties of marriage, or of being married to a non-Christian, or of being a slave. Listen to some of the comments that have been made just recently to me about the difficulties of being single. They are real. If only I were married, I'd have security for my future. If only I were married, I'd have a lifelong companion and an answer to loneliness. If only I were married, I'd have someone who really cares for me. If only I were married, I'd be free from parental pressure. I'd no longer be marginalized by the world or the church. If only I were married, I'd be able to enjoy sex. If only I were married, I wouldn't have to push my own wheelchair. And finally, although I love my teddy bear dearly, I would prefer to wake up in the morning next to a human being. Now, Paul is not denying the really tough issues raised there. Remember, he's single too. But he's trying to get us to live life free from an all-absorbing anxiety in whatever situation God has placed us in. Slave, free, single, married. And so he says four things. And we'll tackle each briefly. Be realistic about marriage. Be realistic about the ultimate destiny of every human being. Be realistic about the options in this life. Be radical about purity. First, be realistic about marriage, verses 25 to 28. Now, about virgins, I have no command from the Lord, but I give a judgment as one who, by the Lord's mercy, is trustworthy. Because of the present crisis, I think that it is good for you to remain as you are. Are you married? Do not seek a divorce. Are you unmarried? Do not look for a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. But those who marry will face many troubles in this life, and I want to spare you from them. Now, one of the problems of our current age is that we tend to think that the normal Christian life consists of a happy childhood, a dream wedding, a successful career, and a cozy retirement. That's a quote from John Richardson's book, which I think is very apt. Certainly the non-Christian world pushes that view. It's so easy, isn't it, to get the impression that everyone in our world is basically on a conveyor belt whose end point is the leafy calm of the rural Cotswold village. Maybe you do rough it for a moment in inner city Stockwell or Islington, but it won't be for long. Soon you'll be on the career ladder and married and on your way outward and upward. And you only just have to take a brief look at the glossy mags, the Sunday Times supplements, the pension adverts. And one of the checkpoints along the way to Morton on the motorway is the white wedding. There she is, the supermodel from Southend, resplendent in her designer dress. There he is, eligible Eric, in his moss-bros best and squeaky new shoes, and they head off into the sunset to live happily ever after. Paul disagrees.
Now, of course, he doesn't have a mega downer on marriage. But his point is this: we must be realistic about it. Married people have troubles, you know. And he wouldn't mind sparing the Corinthians from them. Now, at one level, this is just as true for the secular world as it is for the Christian world. You only have to look at your own relatives and friends to know that the picture from the glossy magazines is total make-believe. The trouble with the make-believe world that the mags have conjured up is that it does great damage. See, when you wake up and instead of finding a Spice Girl clone in your bed, it's screaming children or a wife with depression or a husband who's out of a job or financial package that simply can't deliver the earning power, well, you may well then want to jump off the conveyor belt. Be realistic about marriage. And don't get me wrong, don't get Paul wrong. Marriage has many, many blessings. There are joys, there are delights. But at the same time, marriage means troubles. There can be no greater loneliness than the loneliness of living under the same roof of someone who is unable to agree with you on something as fundamental as your Christian faith, or any other matter, any other subject for that matter. No greater loneliness than an unhappy marriage. But the normal problems of marriage in a fallen world are compounded for the Christian. Because you and I, if we belong to Jesus Christ and call ourselves Christians, are living for Jesus wherever we are in a world which hates Jesus and his teaching. It is increasingly politically incorrect to follow Jesus in this country. Now that is, of course, especially true for those who are living in the Sudan, who are being burnt out of their houses, or some even crucified, we are being told this morning. It's especially true for those in Pakistan, for other countries that are undergoing severe persecution. But in one way or another, Jesus tells us that every Christian is going to undergo some sort of persecution somewhere along the way as they head in the opposite direction to the world. I guess most of us can think of people who have been ostracized or demoted or even lost jobs. And the majority of those things are much harder to handle when you have hungry little mouths to think of, or a wife to care for. Do you see Paul's point? He's not got a downer on marriage. But marriage for the Christian is no cure-all elixir. It's no sinecure for all of life's problems. It's not wrong to marry, or less keen to marry. Look at verse 28. Now, verse 28 is very powerful if you think that the prevailing culture is saying it's keener to be single. He says, if you do marry, you haven't sinned. That is strong language to a church with super spiritual view of singleness. He's not saying, okay, marry if you must, providing you're over 30. He's saying, fine, marry. But don't be unrealistic about marriage. And don't spend all your time, if you're not married yet, wrapped up in the pursuit of a husband or a wife. Don't allow the longing to get married to take over. And if you are about to get married, don't be unrealistic about it. He will probably go gaga before too long. And you will be left looking after him. It's not my wife who stuck that bit in. So don't be unrealistic about marriage. Don't be unrealistic about this present age, 29 to 31. And his point here is that our present age, with all its accepted social, economic, everyday norms, is passing away. Look at verse 29. What I mean, brothers, is that the time is short. From now on, those who have wives should live as if they had none, those who mourn as if they did not, those who are happy as if they were not, those who buy something as if it were not theirs to keep, those who use the things of the world as if not engrossed in them. For this world, in its present form, is passing away. The trouble is, in other words, marriage is no one's ultimate destiny. trouble is, it's easy to get the impression, or to give the impression, that marriage is the ultimate human destiny. Especially at our age and at our stage of life. Verse 31 puts it so clearly, doesn't it? Those who use the things of the world as if not engrossed in them. For this world in its present form is passing away. You see, it's easy to forget, isn't it, that all marriage ends in separation as one or another partner dies. That all relationships, all experiences, all possessions, all of life on this earth is only a staging post to an ultimate goal in eternity. And so, says Paul, we need to live as if not. Now, of course, he's not saying we should never mourn, or that those who are married should abandon their wives and possessions. This is a piece of rhetoric. And his point is that the return of Jesus should colour all the way we view every relationship and every situation in which we find ourselves. Slave, free, married, single, rich, poor. We must be realistic about our ultimate human destiny. One of you were telling me just this week that your flatmate, who is not yet a Christian, is simply obsessed with being in a relationship with one other person. To her, the only way to find true fulfillment, true joy, true peace, true lasting happiness, is to locate Mr. Right and move in with him. Now, some Christian men and women give the same impression. And we can be even more obsessed with marriage than our non-Christian friends. There are some Christians who never seem content unless they're in an exclusive relationship with someone else, or unless they have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, as if there really is only one way of living. Some married people, have you noticed, are just the same. And it's ghastly. So cooey and wrapped up in each other, so tied up in each other, they never have any time for anybody else. It's all just that one relationship, as if that is the ultimate human destiny. Now, Paul is not telling us to be bad husbands and wives. But he's saying to us, marriage will not last forever. There's no marriage in heaven. The married Christian person, like the working Christian person, like the happy Christian person, should have their eyes on a greater and more permanent future destiny. Like the small child in the back of the car. Daddy, are we nearly there yet? The world we live in lives for the moment, seizes the day, is wrapped up in the present. But the Christian knows that this world, with all its norms, is passing away. And so she or he will have her eye or his eye on the future. Marriage is not our ultimate goal. So this age is passing. Don't be totally engrossed. Only in heaven will we find true fulfillment. Only in heaven, lasting peace, complete joy, genuine happiness. I know that on a bad day, a week of being single may seem like a long time. But Paul says the main way to handle it is to put marriage into its right perspective. He's not denying that singleness may be tough, but here are two truths to preach to ourselves when it is tough. Be realistic about marriage. Be realistic about our ultimate destiny. Thirdly, be realistic about this life. There are two ways to live. Both are right. Unlike the tract, where one is wrong and one is right. There are two ways to live, and both are right. Now, we've already seen one way of reading the next few verses, 32 to 35, which is to say that Paul is presenting a third reason why it's more spiritual to stay single. And the reason is because married people are divided. But there's no doubt that there's truth in the observation. If you have a wife and children, if you have a husband, you will find that you have less time for Christian work. Just this week, I turned down an invitation to speak at something or other because I needed at that time to spend more time with my wife and family. They are my number one congregation. But there is a real danger that we leap from that observation to force Paul into a different conclusion to the one that he's making. There's truth in the observation, not in the conclusion of that position. Remember Paul's point. He does not want us to be noosed, disturbed, distracted. He doesn't want us to be care-ridden and full of anxiety. There's no better way of noosing a whole congregation than by telling us that it is keener to be single. I tell you, the married people will be leaping for the divorce courts. So I want to suggest something that I was shown by one of the commentators on this passage. He suggests that we are wrong to read being concerned as if it's a negative thing. So Paul's point is the Corinthians should not be uptight about the whole issue of being married or single. Some are married, others, the many widows, the numbers of unmarried people, are not. There are two ways to live. One way is to be concerned about the Lord. On the other hand, there is another way for the married people. Of course they're concerned about the Lord, but they are also concerned about their wives and family. But it's not less spiritual or more spiritual in terms of the options available. Don't let the super-spiritual cult noose you and disturb your mind. Let's read that part of the passage just to see how it sounds. I would like you to be free from anxiety about whether it's keen to be married or single. An unmarried man cares about the Lord's affair, how he can please the Lord. But a married man is concerned about the affairs of the world, how he can please his wife. His interests are divided. An unmarried woman or virgin is concerned about the Lord's affairs. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. I am saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way in undivided is very unhelpful, in undisturbed devotion to the Lord. I want to say that us married men and women need to take this right to heart. How quick to see marriage as the ultimate human destiny and to start plotting and planning and longing for our single friends to get married. How quick we are to want to urge the men in St. Helens to get on with it. Paul seems to be saying that in a fallen world where marriage means trouble and in a passing age, where we need to be asking, are we nearly there yet? There are two options. Both are right. Neither is simple. Rather than devaluing singleness by plotting a single person's earthly destiny as if we were God, we should be spending our time praying and encouraging and planning and plotting for the single person to be more devoted to the Lord. Because that's the life situation that God has put them in at the moment. We should be urging them towards godliness, urging them to make the most of the situation they're in. Single men and women, we need to help single men and women to encourage, to overcome concern about the current state, to realize that there are two ways to live. Neither is necessarily particularly easy. And to engage in the possibilities that your current state places you in. You are free to be concerned for the Lord's affairs. Throw yourself into it. The period of opportunity may not last long. It may be God's will for you, for your life. But you do have real opportunities for Christian service in a passing age. One of the greatest strengths of St. Helens is the number of single men and women who have been free over the years to throw themselves wholeheartedly into God's work here. Doesn't make them keener. Doesn't kind of put them further up the ladder of spiritual options. They're not kind of superheroes, but it is a way in God's world. And of course, it doesn't take away any of the difficulties of singleness for them. So, says Paul, don't be unrealistic about marriage. There will be troubles for every married Christian. Don't be unrealistic about our ultimate human destiny. This present age is passing. Marriage is not the final destination. Don't be unrealistic about life now. There are two ways to live. Both are right. Finally, be radical about purity. Now, right the way through our series, we have seen the absolute seriousness of sexual immorality. Sexual immorality, says Paul, leads to hell. So, says Paul in verses 36 to 38, if sexual immorality becomes an issue in a relationship, get married fast. That is the basic message of 36 to 38. If anyone thinks he's acting improperly towards the virgin he's engaged to, and if she's getting on in years and he feels he ought to marry, he should do as he wants. He is not sinning. They should get married. The man who can cope, the man who settled the matter in his own mind, who is under no compulsion but has control over his will and has made up his mind not to marry, this man also does the right thing. So then he who marries the virgin does right. He who does not marry her does even better for pastoral and practical reasons. So that means that long before sex becomes an issue in a relationship between one man and one woman, we need to have thought through carefully the implications of being married to that man or that woman. Because as soon as sex comes on the agenda, says Paul, sexual immorality is serious. And the place for sex is in marriage. And if sex becomes an issue, then you need to get married. So first, the questions you will need to be asking, can I marry him or her? Well, is he or she a believer? Verses 39 tells us they must belong to God. Is he or she the opposite sex to me? Chapter 6, verse 9 tells us that homosexuality is wrong. Is he or she already married to someone else? God tells us in his word that he hates divorce. Those are the kind of questions we need to be asking long before sex even becomes an issue in a relationship. And then, is he or she a wise person to marry? Will I be able to give myself to him or her, for better for worse, for richer for poorer, till death us do part? Am I equipped for the single life without her or him? Will I be able to go through the troubles of marriage with her? Will I be able to give myself to him in the way we looked at last week? Then, and only then, get on with it and get married fast. But our trouble is we tend to leap into these relationships. Sex is on the agenda straight away. We haven't even thought about marrying the girl or the man. And then we suddenly realize we've gone too far. And we start asking the serious questions. And like the non-Christian world, we leave behind us when we discover, oh, I don't actually think I do want to marry this person. We leave behind ourselves a trail of damage and disaster. Paul says, be radical about purity. Be realistic about marriage first. Don't be unrealistic about our ultimate human destiny. Marriage is not the end. Don't be unrealistic about life now. There are two ways to live. Both are right. Finally, be radical about purity. Think carefully before you start heading out with someone and get engaged in any kind of sexual involvement with someone. Because sex before marriage and outside of marriage is serious. I'm going to leave a moment's quiet and then I believe we're going to sing. So let's just take a moment to think through some of the things we've been looking at.